is October 29th, the taping Great Biblical Personalities. Chazal tell us from chapter 13 of Sefer Shmuel Aleph that Shaul was as innocent as a one-year-old his entire life. And what Chazal is trying to tell us is, as they do outright in Yuma, the beginning of the second parak, that as a human specimen, Shaul was David's superior by far. He was by his internal mode, his personality, was a greater moral specimen than God. Right? And that was his undoing, says the Gemara. Because when you think of yourself so that you can do no wrong, not because of a breach of humility, but just you know that I'm so right, I'm so good, I'm so perfect, then you begin to justify everything you do. Right? And while Shaul certainly has his very humble origins, as we just described, nonetheless, when tested, he really fails every test of acknowledging what problem he is. Which Chazal picked up on. Listen to this beautiful Mamar Chazal. It says, Ein ben David ba ela im yesh lo kupas shel shrotzim munach mitzahara. Right? What we call that today, like a can of worms or bones in the closet, you know what I'm saying? Why do we insist that Mashiach has secrets to hide? Not as perfect. And if you think yourself too perfect, you'll still pay the show. Not looking for perfection, but looking for someone who acknowledges when he made a mistake. Which David is able to do, Shaul is not able to do. Right? So this is Shaul's first story. Involves a battle with the Philistines. Right? And I have to have some information. Is that Shmuel had already told him, we will meet together in 7 days. We will do battle against the Philistines. So now I led the nation in battle. And in 7 days, we'll offer a korban, and then we'll do battle with the Philistines. So read the underlying portion. Vayochel shivas yamim lamoed asher Shmuel. 7 days from then, when Shmuel made the cheshbon. V'lo ba Shmuel ha-Gilgal. Shmuel's late. I would like to contend with intent. He's purposely late. What will Shaul do given the constraints facing him of the people who want to get on with the battle? The Philistines are probably within eyeshot, right? This is a problem, by the way, that faces David in chapter 5 of Shmuel Bet, also with the Philistines. Not so much clear from Shmuel Bet as much as from Divrei Hayamim, which describes the battle raging, but Hashem tells David, I want you to wait until I give the signal. God, we can see the whites of their eyes, for goodness sakes. What do you want? What do you want us to do? Wait until I tell you. And the people who wanted to fight, but David held them back. Right? And here Shaul is faced with the same kind of thing. What is a leader? Is someone who's able to convince the people to do something that is not popular. Right? If the people want the spoils of Amalek, how am I going to convince them not to? Remember a comparable case in Shmuel Aleph when David had 600 men and only 400 of them fought to bring back their wives and children from the Amalekim, and 200 stayed behind, guarded the roads, and did some other things to make sure that people didn't destroy where they were in Ziklag while they were gone. And when the 400 men came back with all the spoils, they said, these 200 didn't risk their lives with us, but they're not getting any of the spoils. We're just giving back their women and children. David said, Chas v'shalom. They performed their tasks behind, and they're going to get the same share of spoils that you got. Of course, the next battle, who knows who's going to want to volunteer. Right, but the 200 had to live with the shame of not fighting. But they did get their spoils back. It was a very unpopular thing that David set up, and he said, now it'll be a chok b'Yisrael. That's what I say to David. The difference in the leadership of Shalom, the difference David
the David is ready to demonstrate the most prevailing necessity of good leadership.
It's very easy to lead people when they all agree with you.
The question is to lead people, and if you get it wrong, to step back from what you're doing in your unpopular position. Right? I don't think Lincoln took a focus group about whether to prosecute the Civil War.
Right? He just thought it was the right thing to do. Anyway,
the 7 days are up, and lo bo Shmuel ha-Gilgal. I think this is a test. But your fits are all male loves, so people start to scramble.
Now remember, this is the Shaul who got the people to fight their first battle. Remember, he cut up the cow, the bull into 12 pieces, and sent a piece to every tribe. Remember that? Right? He knows how to get the people to rally.
Whatever Shaul, like Yeshua Eli Ha'ola Ha'shomim, Vayal Ha'ola. It's all in that one pasuk. It says, bring the sacrifice. The Ola and the Shmoman, and they brought it.
Uh-oh. I'm supposed to wait for Shmuel to do that.
So I ask you, what's so terrible? So he jumped the gun. But he can follow Sola Alosa Ola and Shmuel. Bad time in trouble. As soon as he brought up the Ola, just that Shmuel comes. But he takes Shaul because Sola Alosa. So Shaul goes out to greet him and to bless him. He goes, look at his Shaul. You should be hiding, not running out together. Shaul doesn't even realize that he did something wrong. And frankly, the reader doesn't either. What's wrong here?
So he jumped the gun, he brought the carpet 5 minutes early. What's the big deal?
So Shmuel, Shmuel's going to blow a gasket here. Vayomer Shmuel, Mel Sisa, what'd you do? Shaul must be incredulous. What do you mean?
What did you do?
Remember Shaul, Kiroisi Kinafatsa, I think he's getting it. I saw the Kinafatsa Om, that's what it says, by Yafet Sa'am. People started to scatter and scramble.
But Tobo Basalam away, how you mean?
You didn't come when you said you would. So what am I supposed to do? To think that maybe your train is late, if you got stuck in traffic? Maybe you read the paper too long in the morning? Maybe you're not coming at all? How long are you expecting to wait? I could wait too long and people could die. You didn't send me a message. You didn't even text me. You didn't say anything of why you're late. What am I supposed to do? But Omar, I said to myself, I told you to preach to me like I feel good. May Hashem look at this. There's a path for that whole lot. So I said, you know what? I'm going to lose this opportunity in this battle to push him. And I certainly can't fight them without bringing a korban, because if I don't have God, I haven't treated God. So I made the executive decision, after all, I'm kidding. I made the executive decision to bring the car on this.
By the way, neither Shaul nor Shmuel is a Kohen. How are they doing this? By the way, there are like 20 places in Sefer Shmuel where people bring their own private Kohen.
Those are bones.
That's their bones, right? The question is strengthened by the fact that at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, the tribes are ready to go to war over such a thing. Just because Reuben and Gad and Chatzin and Asher did it once, and here in Sefer Shmuel, they're going to go along with us. The answer is that with the fall of Shiloh, you could bring Kurbanos, even non-Kohanim, in your backyard. There are some restrictions. First of all, in Masechet Zevachim, we refer to some of these restrictions. But most were not. Even when the Bamos stood, there was a holy place, right? In Nov, that was destroyed too, this time by Shaul. Givon, right?
Also
Givon.
What was that?
That was one of the Bama Gidoa, the big Bama.
For Korban Pesach, he had to go to the big Bama. Gilgal, Shiloh, Nov, and Givon. Right? But when the Mishnah stood at Shiloh, you couldn't bring Bamos to your own place. Only when it's at Nov, which is Sefer Shmuel.
When Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, it said he went first to Givon to offer Kabbalahs there, and then built up Yerushalayim to go to Beis HaMikdash. So Givon was the place right before. Right? So I ask you again, what's so wrong? Why is Shmuel blowing this gasket? He says, "Remember Shmuel of Shaul, Niskolta, Lo Shamar, Desh Mitzvah, Hashem, Lokech, Hashem, Tzikho." You made a mistake. He sculpted one of those strange Hebrew words, Seichel and Sochel. It's the same word, but one means to act foolishly, one means to act smart. So here it means foolish, of course. Lo shamar doesn't say Hashem Hashem alkecha shetzucho. Ki atah hechina shemes mamlach becha el Yisrael adolam. If you had waited for me, your kingdom could have lasted adolam, perpetuity, or at least for a very long time. Prove to me from the Torah that that's what it means.
What, 50 years?
Yeah, it could be 50 years with Dafka. By the way, the Beis HaMikdash was built just about 50 years after this. To 40, and in Shlomo's fourth year, he started. In other words, there was a decree that the Beis HaMikdash should be built at a certain time.
Shlomo's fourth year started building? So how old was he when he left?
How old was he when he started building?
Yeah.
16. He was 12 when he started, in his fourth year. Can you figure that out?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Maybe it's crazy.
Okay, but I mean, how old Shlomo was is also a tradition. But this is a message that says that the Beis HaMikdash was built in the land of Binyamin.
Yeah.
And of course, Shlomo should have built it. Yeah. Well, so the king of Binyamin built it. It's in his land.
Yeah.
And then he would have, but this prophecy ruined it for him. So it could be 50 years, it could be just for a long, long time. When an Eved wants to work on and he gets his ear pierced, says Va'adola Olam. So the Parsha Pshat is it's a good long time.
Yeah.
Right? Longest time that we count. Alright. So he said, you made a real mistake here. You should have waited. So can you figure out, guys, what message is the text of Shmuel trying to teach us about the prophet and the king? No.
The prophet and the king.
Shmuel is the prophet. He has been our great leader until now, and the king replaces him. What very public message does the prophet want to give in front of the people in the battle?
That having a king has no worries, the best in terms of prophet.
Right, having a king is not a replacement for the prophet. He's your leader, and I fulfilled that for you before. That was personal. We talked about that last time. But here's the thing. The nations of the world fight their wars through the prowess of their kings. We fight our wars, B'Shem Hashem Elokeinu Nazkin. Eila Barechav, Eila Basusim, Eila B'Molochim. Right? What's the reason that Bnei Israel gave to Shaul, to Shmuel back in chapter 8 for why they want a king? To fight our wars. Now, when they told him, I'm reading between the lines now, for instance, Gidon, you be our king and your son be our king after you. It's such a nice day.
Fair enough.
So he said, you be our king and your son after you. What's their svar? What's the whole svar about? You be our king and your son after you. After what they've been through so many times in Sefer Shoftim.
They wanted the stability.
Stability. Every time in Sefer Shoftim that the Shofet dies, the nation devolves back into the same old shtick. That they've so many times. How many times can you keep doing the same thing? Right? Remember that? So, but Shmuel wants to establish in the first battle after Shaul was appointed king. Well, I should say, the first battle is with Hishgila. That was just to help someone else. This is, we're threatened here by the Plishtim. I want to show that we defeat the Plishtim not with the king. We defeat the Plishtim because of the prophet with the king. And the king alone does not, in a mile of anamori. Okay, clear? Now let's go to the next problem Shaul has is where he does not rid all of Amalek. Okay? Why Amalek? What makes Amalek worse than all the other nations? Did Amalek harm us more than Mitzrayim?
They're the first ones, right? Attack us.
Right. You can argue that they, if not for them, then all the others were ready to make peace with us. And here our Malik says, yeah, the water's fine, jump in, even though they got scalded. But they did cool off the hot water by jumping in. Right? That is the parable that the Midrash gives. But isn't this a setup? Why does it say in the Torah that you have to destroy all of the spoils from Malik and you can't use any of it? Why does it say that in the Torah? Shmuel makes up a new law about Amalek, and that's the king's downfall? Surely Shmuel wants this man to be a success. What's he setting him up for? So the sources at the bottom of this page. Explains, Shalom yodiach nin v'nechet shal Amalek, v'lo gamal v'lo chamor tachas kol ha-shamayim, shalom yabru gamal zeh shal Amalek. As the Radak explains. In other words, you have this beautiful dresser. It's a very antique looking dresser. It says, wow, where did you get that dresser? I never saw anything like it. Oh, I took it in a battle when I fought against the Malay with a book. It goes to Timchei Zecher HaMalek. That's why the shul's name both Zecher HaMalek and Zecher HaMalek. The Sifrei to Devarim says Zecher HaMalek means a Malay's children, his grandchildren. Zecher HaMalek means anything that belonged to them that you might be inclined to relate to them. So that's how we learn in the Oraisa that Shmuel was correct. I don't want anything of theirs. I don't want anyone thinking that I'm fighting against HaMalek for personal gain. That being said, the Rambam Paskin, I don't have this in these sources, the Rambam Paskin in Hilchos Melachim, that even when fighting HaMalek, we have to sue for peace first. Tell them, I'm here to eradicate the evil that you are and that you represent. If you demonstrate that you are not acting in that way, the Rambam Paskin is amazing. Everybody the Karoseh Deh L'Shalom, even Amalek. Only Amon and Moab care to join the Kehil of Hashem. Amalek and Kehil. B'nei Banu Shalom on the new Torah of Nebrak. There's Rashi in Yeshayahu of all places where he writes about what we have to do with Amalek. He says that no, they can convert and marry Jews. Okay. All right, so that is that's to explain the extra mitzvah. Now let's read the Baranel at the top of the next page. Turn the page to the right hand side. Would you like to read the question? You know, Rabbanel sets up his commentary by topics, and he answers a certain amount of questions for each topic, and then he goes on to the next topic, the questions, and then he goes about answering it in his commentary. Okay? Shaila HaRevi'it, the fourth question in Shmuel Bey, Shmuel Aleph Perek Tisvav, is Onish? So talking about the profound punishment for such a small sin. What did he do? He left a couple of sheep and he left the king alive. He was going to kill the king anyway, maybe, I don't know. He left the king and a couple of sheep, and for that you lose your kingdom? That's in line with David counting B'nai Israel, the 70,000 died, and what he did with Bathsheba, what he did with Uriah, these sins are comparable? I have a tshuva of Chachmei Provence. It says, what kind of favoritism are we playing here? Right? Why are you forgiving David for such profound sins and you're leaving Shaul alone here? Right? Go ahead, read. Well, that's this parasha. You despise God and God has despised you. Really? For one sheep? And for the keeping the king alive, what's coming? He did the job. He basically did 98%, 99% of the job. Bav shalakach min shalom.
Bahaya, I said, I saw it. I
What was it that makes Hashem reject him as being the king for such a relatively light offense? So let's read the Radak first. It says, Lo Asu, it's such a great copy here, but Lo Asu Heim, Ela Atosha Yavi Yad Cholim Chos, Lo Mochisa, Nira Kiritzon Cho, Lechapitz Cho, Hayavi Dabar, Bechamadita, Bechamadita, Hashemal, Vata'ita. Okay. It's not just that he disobeyed, but that he blames it on the people. That's no excuse for a king. I'm sorry, David's sins are the sins of passion, the sins of gaiva, the sins of taiva. That can happen to anyone, really. But yours is the sense of leadership. It's true, David would never have been in a position to take Bathsheba if he was not king, right? You and I can call for a woman that we're enamored with, and she'll say, get out of here. What are you, I'm not coming to your house. But when you're the king and you call a married woman, she's going to come over. And, you know, does she know what to expect? I don't know. But, right? But still, David's sin is not a chisaron melech. Adarav, melech at that time in history would not accept the musar of his prophet about doing something like this, the way David did. Okay? Okay. Alright, so, your old Bach says something really as profound as you can get about what Shaul did wrong. Is that by taking the spoils, I hinted at it, and leaving the king alive, what do you think he's leaving the king alive for? Why leave the king alive? Why don't you leave some babies alive? Why don't you leave the king alive?
Example of it?
What?
An example of it, like a public example?
Could be. No, it could be sadistic, make the king watch what I'm doing to your people before I kill you. What's more likely was very common practice at the time. What do you do with a king that you capture? Throughout history, what do? You actually capture the king of the other side. You ever hear of a king's ransom? It's worth a lot of money. And chances are, there's another nation nearby that's related to him. Kings used to always marry into neighboring nations. Right? In other words, this king of this country is the father of the son-in-law of, you know, one second, you get another nation who wants to buy this guy. And you get a chest full of jewels for this guy. In other words, it's the same thing guiding you to taking the fattest sheep. It's turning this mitzvah into personal gain. There's nothing more despicable than that. According to this, I quote Rav Aharon Lichtenstein, who wrote about this 30 years ago. Said, the reason why Shaul was punished so seriously was not because he left the king alive, but because he killed everybody else. What do you mean?
It was like being consistent, being alive.
Once you're showing us that you have personal gain in this, that you're killing off a Malik, you're killing off a Malik for personal gain, there's no greater kill or shame than that. Look, we're living in the world of ISIS right now. You know, I spoke with Shul that you know, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism all have very, very violent, bloody texts to work with. Right? You know what we have in Yoshua. You know what we have in Dvar Perikov that we read when we did Yoshua, right? You know what we have in Dvar Perik Zion. Right? So, the difference is that we have moved from the assuredness of prophetic texts, which ISIS feels it's dealing with in its Quran, which makes it kill or behead children, which they did today. Every day they're beheading anyone. Mostly Muslims, by the way. Most of their bloodletting is against Muslims. The world is silent. They kill Christians, they kill Jews, they kill Muslims. The world doesn't care an iota. Let one Jew fight back and shoot someone who's trying to stab him, and then the UN is going to get ahead of him. But the bottom line is that we went from the assuredness of a text of prophecy to a different level. What's taking the place of our prophetic works in our minds? Midrash works. Talmud, the Sifrei, Rabban, Rashi. And once you get into those texts, what are you going to get?
excuse. You're going to find someone who says, I have no problem with killing off every Canaanite man, woman, and children, not giving them a choice of anything but that. And who says that? Rashi will always take the part. There's some he veers off of it in some cases if they manage to escape. And no prisoners. Mechemes Rishus HaKosuf Medaber is the Rashi beginning of Rashi he says it. Because you don't take any Isha Yifas Torah. You have to kill the Isha Yifas Torah, which is a Canaan. So then you have Ramban who says, no, I'm sorry, it's not how we read this. Right? You don't have Tanakh Yishayahu who says, yes, this is what we do, and Yecheskel says, no, we should do that. Well, Yecheskel and Yishayahu are not at the same time. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? You don't have Micha saying this and Amos says that. Prophets are 100% assured. There's no, and when they say something, we follow it with fire and brimstone. But in Midrashic texts, you're not dealing with on that level. You have to start explaining harsh biblical texts, like an eye for an eye. You don't take it literally. We have Torah Shabbat Peh. Reminds me, I'll just close with this for today. Reminds me of a debate. I still have all the articles on it that made the New York Times, which at times loves to write articles about these kind of things. It was a when Israel was back in its back part of the 80s, and a member of the Likud spoke to the Knesset about a labor minister who had just spoken against the occupation, so to say. We should just pull out unilaterally from Yehuda Shomron, the Golan, just pull out unilaterally because we shouldn't be administering other people in these places. So the good guy said, listen, we didn't ask to be administering these places. We just fight defensive wars. We've come to this land in defensive wars. We've announced to them after these wars, we'd like to talk to you about negotiations and about even relinquishing what victor ever shares in the spoils. The victor turns the terms, like the Allies did in World War I, which all but guaranteed World War II. But we're willing to do that. We took over land in wars that you started, and we're willing to give you the land that we've acquired in such places. But just talk to us and give us peace. So the good guy said, and what's so bad about being an occupier? David HaMelech was an occupier. In other words, he occupied land of Aram, and, right? What's so bad about that? Put them to tribute. So the labor guy, Shimon Peres at the time, the labor guy said, we don't have to go along with everything David did, whether it was in the battlefield or on the rooftops. He had to give a shot without a check. Which was ridiculous. That actually, the Times got into the whole thing, and then the Likud guy started screaming at him and became a crazy match about the nature of David and Malach. They love that, because the Times doesn't believe there ever was a David and Malach. And here are Jews fighting over him. Right? So, but let's go back to the point. You see, if David HaMelech did something, now just go 1,000 years ahead. If Mohammed did something in the year 650, then it's okay to do it in 2015. ISIS is working exactly with that thing. So I close with this point. There's a book called Not in My Name. Not in my name.
For
sex, yeah. Not in my name. For the sex, a new book about Islam, what Islam is doing today is not a function of the fact that it's any bloodier than Christianity or Judaism. What's it going through and why is it going through this now? Because it's younger. We went through this also, the zealots and fighting with the Roman times, where Jews were fighting against Jews. And the Gemara talks about that as a sin is chinam, right? And Christians went through that in the 100-year war, right? Well, Christians were killing each other, Protestants were killing Catholics killed Protestants. It's crazy, right? Until those two systems began to view their traditional sacred texts from the eyes of a deeper drasha. Not that we fabricated these drashas. No, chas v'shalom. but that I can see a text of David doing something really horrific to the Moabites, and it doesn't necessarily say that I can do that to the Jordanians today.
Who are, you know, the Moabites?
It's a matter of evolving your interpretation. We have 2,000 years of text that builds one on the other to help us figure out how we should behave today. Right? So that is what's at stake here with respect to what Shaul is doing. Shaul is not being punished for saving, says the Ralbag. That's what got us off on this. For saving a king. It's a big deal. You save a king, you save a couple of sheep. Do you lose a kingdom over that? No. You lose a kingdom over the Chil Hashem of making it look like you're doing this for despicable reasons. So that is Rabbah. Malbim and the Rabbah, they'll say it's more Pasha, as does Rashi, is that Shaul's problem is that he keeps praising Shmuel and says, I did the Rabbah Hashem Tzal Hashem, Hakimosi is the Bar Hashem, right? And then Shmuel engages in what's clearly an onomatopoetic word. You know what the word means? Onomatopoetic? Onomatopoeia, it's called.
Onomatopoeia is a noise.
Right, so when he says he hears the sheep, he says, Umeh kol hatzom hazeh be'oznai. Umeh kol hatzom hazeh be'oznai. He didn't say ma or ma. He says, Umeh kol hatzom hazeh be'oznai. What's the sheep that I hear if you said that you heeded everything I said? I said to get rid of everything they own. To bring you a korban. Kamala, oh, what are you talking about? It says the Pasuk be a Kol Shaul. Shaul doesn't know that it's going to be a book written by that says what happened. Written by Shmuel. I'm a Navi. I know why you saved the sheep. Okay? You can't blame this is good enough to lose your kingdom over. You blame it on the people? When you did it yourself, the people fucking you. You didn't follow the people. Alright, okay, we'll close with that. So that's going to make us get into the next section, which is done. All right, we're going to now...